So we were going to talk about we're going to talk about action photography. But before we do, whenever you come in, and you've been coming in since was it just after Christmas?
Yeah, January, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was cold,
and we're still here.
We're still doing it. Yeah, amazing, really. But we talk about the different times of the year, and now I think we've had the first day of spring. So
I think this is a great time actually. If you want to get into photography as a hobby, it's a really good time to actually, you know, pick that camera up. You pat someone. Brought you for Christmas, you haven't actually got out there and use it, get out there and start looking. And nature's a really good thing to photograph as a subject, which is why spring's a great time to start, because obviously the world is starting to come alive around us, isn't it? You know, you have the obvious cliche stuff of you know, daffodils and blossom on flowers, but there's also the wildlife is starting to wake up and become a lot more active. In fact, this morning on doing the dog walk, I actually saw a monk jack.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, monk jack just bustled away in the distance, and fortunately the dog didn't see it before I did. So anyway, and the other thing about it is as well, because now's a great time, the birds are getting a lot more active, beginning to build nests in the city and in the surrounding villages around here. And if you have got some of that activity happening in your garden, particularly if you've got a young person living in the house, you might want to sort of think about purchasing one of those, you can get like a bird box camera.
Yes.
And I think some are infrared. They sort of work like a CCTV camera. Start from about sort of mid-40s onwards, depending on the quality. So they're not cheap, but it's a great way, if you've got a youngster in the house, to start sort of introducing him to nature and making him more aware, because you'll be able to watch the hatching, hopefully the hatching of the eggs and stuff. So great time to start photography.
And do they, if you have one of those type of cameras, do you put it in the bird box and you can set it
The point is you can't now go and disturb a bird box if a bird's nestling in it. And in some species, I think that's actually illegal anyway. But if you get your own box and put it up, you've still got enough time. I think you'd still have enough time now if you located your bird box in the right place. Obviously, a lot of the local wildlife groups and stuff will give you advice on that online, but it's well worth doing. A couple of my friends have done it. They're younger, have done it the last previous years with their younger children. The kids just love it, you know, and they just get away with it, and they come home from school and want to know what's happened. I'd suggest that's the sort of, you know, today's top tip, really.
And do you get the kind of time-lapse type features on those cameras?
I think, to be honest, you can get it as a live video, you can get it as time-lapse. I mean, I don't know a lot about them, apart from I know other people have used them. I was looking online today to see them, and it seems it's obviously a big thing, because you can get lots of different sorts at lots of different prices.
Yeah, I must admit, I've just discovered the time-lapse feature on my iPhone. So, you know what it's like when you discover a new feature, you start mucking around with it. So, I'm doing all kinds of mundane stuff just to amuse myself. Like, I've got my son, and we got a time-lapse of him jet-washing the patio this week.
But you see, you're of that age, aren't you? But actually, talking about birds nesting, I mean, you mentioned about the Cambridgeshire Fire and Rescue guys down at Parkside Fire Station who do my car wash.
Yes.
But actually, I remember, it's probably 25 years ago, I went down to Parkside Police Station to do a press picture because a blackbird had nestled in a bicycle basket.
Right, OK.
And the police had basically cordoned off this corner of the car park where this bird was nesting until the bird had hatched and gone away. You know, great security if you're the mum, isn't it?
It is, absolutely, yeah.
Anyway.
So the thing we promised that we'd talk about today, because it's boat race weekend, and you very kindly come along with armed with a map, which is actually really good, because my parents come from the sort of Barnes area, so... My granddad used to go and watch the boat race throughout his life. Sadly, granddad no longer with us, but used to go down there and watch the boat race every year. And as a youngster, although he came from quite a working class family, and rowing was a bit of a posh thing to do, there was a rowing club down at Barnes where he lived, which was run by some well-to-do people for the working class lads. So my granddad did a bit of rowing as a young man, but the boat race is still a really popular event, isn't it? Cambridge, our fortunes in more recent years haven't perhaps been so great. I don't know. Have you got any insight or any knowledge on how we think we're going to do this year?
I think they're either going to come first or second, aren't they?
I think you might be right.
But, the boat race, for me, has always been the build-up to it.
Yes.
And I haven't actually done any photography to do with it over the last sort of 3 or 4 years. But prior to that, I used to do a lot of photography in the months before the build-up. So whether that was for newspapers or magazines, And you used to go out to the Ouse at Ely, where they've got the new boathouse, and that's where the boat crew from Cambridge go to train every day. They'd go out there in their minibus and they'd go along the Ouse. So my memories of the boat race, my early memories of being involved, would be to go out on a January afternoon, just as it was getting dark, because the guys just sort of come over after lectures, and you'd be out there on the sort of support vessel with the coach on it, and the guys would be rowing away. And in the eight, and then we'd be following them, taking photographs of them, and it was very cold. I can remember one occasion it was snowing.
Wow.
I can remember one occasion looking at the guys rowing, you could take a great photo of the steam coming off them.
Really?
It's working so hard. Wow. But we were sitting in this boat with every layer you could find on, including
your
spare tyre rug from the car, you know, around you. Oh, it was just freezing. They are so hardy. And for me, the thing about the boat race and a photographer, like a lot of sporting events, is actually that loneliness of the training. Not the glory moments or the victory, but it's those pictures people take in any sport prepping.
Yes.
But interesting about rowing, I think, I was thinking about this morning, and I was sort of looking in my photographic books and stuff about the evolution of photography. And rowing, not necessarily as a sport, but as a pastime, is one of probably the earliest activities to be photographed regularly. Because after portraits, landscapes was the next thing people used to focus on. Because you couldn't really do movement for quite a long time after the invention of photography, image capturing.
Yes.
So you'd always have a landscape, and it would usually be a water. And of course, if you have a boat on it, it's a point of interest. And it would obviously usually be someone, it'd be someone rowing.
Yes.
That was before motorboats in the sort of 1830s, 40s. Movement, of course. That's the thing with all sport photography, particularly rowing. You want to catch movement. And that wasn't until about 1870s when the first movement was caught in photography. And there are those famous pictures. There's a dozen or 12, depending how you see these things, sequence of a horse galloping.
Yes.
You may have seen them. And that's taken by an American, Edward Mayling. And he used 12 cameras to capture this, the horses galloping.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it's the first time really movement had been caught and studied in camera. And what was interesting about it, almost sort of studied in real time, shall we say, in a science way. But what was interesting, the shutter speed was 1,000th of a second, which is really fast. And it sort of proves how sophisticated already the camera lens had got, that someone could shoot it at that fast. We're talking about 1,000th of a second.
Yeah, that is fast, isn't it? As you say, for that period.
But because it was done on glass plate, obviously you couldn't go like you do now. So he had to use a sequence of cameras which were timed. But what interestingly about that picture, so we'll get to rowing in a minute, you know me. interesting about this picture is about the horses galloping, though. It was up until that moment, people had known, and certainly, you know, it was well sort of believed that when a horse, there was a point when both four legs were off the ground.
Yeah.
But what was interesting about these pictures, it was the case that, yes, four hoofs were off the ground at a moment in time. So, in other words, the horse was flying, if you want.
Yes.
But actually, the hoofs were in a different place than had previously been thought.
Hmm.
So all these, you know, these paintings of horses and stuff galloping were technically wrong.
Ah, that's interesting, isn't it?
So back to the rowing.
Yes.
Fast forward to today, and I think the important thing we have to focus on now, because most people can take lots of pictures, you know, that's the thing, everyone takes lots of pictures, yeah.
Sure.
All different sorts of cameras we use and stuff. But I think you have to be focusing on, if you really want a great sports picture, no longer is it good enough just to have action frozen. It has to be a really good quality picture.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you're using a DSLR, like folks like I do for work, you know, big cameras with digital sensors and stuff in them, but that's easier to do, and we can get closer to the action. But if you're using your compact camera, of course, and today perhaps if you're standing Thames side, or even if you're going to go and photograph any sport, you know, you're at the side of a pitch or stuff, you have to, I think the key thing really of sport photography is you have to work within the limitations of your camera.
Right.
Because there's no point taking an action picture, but it's such a small speck in your screen that it's actually got no impact.
So
you've got to wait until the action comes close to you.
Right.
So if you've got your mobile or you've got your compact camera, then what you need to do is try to do like a scene to capture that moment.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Look at it like an oil, you know, one of the masters would have looked at it, you know, and done the whole scene of what was happening. So if you're down at Putney Bridge or wherever, you know, encompass all the surrounding in your picture. So you're looking more for like a landscape picture to record the occasion.
That's got the rowers in it when
those rowers coming past. Yeah.
So some of it is judgment, isn't it? You've just got to work out when you think that moment is going to be. And would you say, you were talking about horses and horse racing and horse movement earlier, and now we're talking about rowing. And I am sure when those boats come by or when you're watching them rehearsing, it's actually a lot faster than it probably looks on the television.
Oh, sure.
Is rowing a difficult one, or is that not a bad one to cut your teeth on?
Rowing's a great sport, actually, to practice. Even if you're into photography, you want to practice action, have a go at rowing, because you'll soon understand about a movement in a picture.
Yes.
So you can either have a nice fluid, a little bit of subject movement going for your picture. So you talk about you can actually, if you were slow enough shutter speed and you pan your camera along, you can actually get it so the oars are moving, but the boat itself is still.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
And obviously the guys on it will be moving, but you'll see the parts of a body which are still, like the cocks in the back. Him or her will be a solid, because they tend not to move too much.
Yes.
For it. So you can catch it like that way there. The other thing to do, I think, to look at it, is to look at the light, because light plays such a good part. Now, the other thing is, it's weather is quite nasty, because when it's inclement weather, which we often have,
yes,
you know, it's got no scruples, and even if it's a final or an important sporting occasion, it doesn't care, does it? If it's going to rain, it's going to rain.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you have to go along with that, and you have to try and incorporate that into your photography. So don't sort of try and change the weather or the lighting. Go with what lighting you've got. But if you really want to take great sports photography, you really do need a DSLR, or DSLR even.
Yes.
Get it right, yeah?
Yes.
Digital single-lens reflex camera. But if you have got a mobile thing, you can still say, you can get creative pictures with it, but don't think you're going to get, like, you know, the stunning bestseller picture.
No.
Now, having said that, tomorrow morning we'll wake up and the shot of the boat race will no doubt be taken for somebody on their mobile phone, won't it?
Yeah.
And you'll text me and say, you were wrong again.
It can it can happen, can't it?
But
And on that subject of SLR, good. I suppose something to ask you there is, obviously you need to spend a bit more to get one of those. But and I know this is a really hard question to answer, so I'm putting you on the spot, because I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this. But what would you say, someone's thinking of making that move and getting themselves a digital SLR camera, what sort of money do you want to spend, would you say? Or between what and what is... I know it's as much as you can afford.
I think you need to set your budget between sort of £600 and £1,000. You'd get a good intro one where you can add lenses to it.
Yes.
Because what you're paying for in a digital SLR camera is actually the sensor.
Yes.
It's the bit which takes the place of the film.
Yes.
And that's the expensive part of a camera. And the more money you pay, the better sort of sense you'll have on it, which helps with the quality. It also helps... a good sensor means that you'll be able to take better pictures in poor light. So when it's not as light as one would like for a picture, the sensor will be able to still cope with that. And you'll get some good atmospheric pictures. When I started off as a trainee many years ago, well, it's not that long ago really, but when I started as a trainee in the early 80s, I used to get sent along to sporting staff. It could have been the rugby at Grange Road here in Cambridge, Grangetor Road, or it could be the football up, the Abbey there.
Yes.
And the city, as it was then.
Yeah.
You're sitting around to do this stuff for the paper. And we really were limited for the amount of film speed we had. And what we used to do is we used to get the films and push process them. So you'd get a film which was meant to process in the tanks. They had our own little, little processing rooms.
Yep.
And you would have to, say, process that for, if it was usually like 4 minutes, because we used to do high, sort of fast process turnaround time.
Yes.
You might then have to process that for 16 minutes. But then we'd end up with really grainy pictures, like golf ball size. We looked at the pitch and it had lots of grain on it.
Yes.
Quite atmospheric.
Yeah.
But we were always pushing for quality, because we had to. We had to get the best we could. And as I started off this piece with you, I do think that that's the one thing you have to strive for. If you want to be the sports photographer, who stands out, if you want to be the guy who ends up working for Getty and you're going around to all the sort of global sports events, what stands them out from the rest of us is that they are always pushing for a quality, so that whatever the occasion, whatever the sport, not only does the pitch have impact, but it's a quality yes. you can use anywhere, in a magazine, on a wall, you know. And I think that's the one thing, really. So, yeah, understand the equipment you've got. You have to. So there's no point today thinking, oh, I'm going to go down and photograph a boat race tomorrow. I'll get my camera out. You might have left that too late. But today's a good day to start thinking about practicing now so that next year you can go down and take a great picture.
Excellent. OK, well, listen, on that note, we could chat till 12:15, couldn't we? But Flavour are in there next door. They might not approve of that plan. So, Phil, listen, it's been great to chat to you. Thanks for all your tips and advice. Fascinating subject as ever. And all the best, of course, to Cambridge tomorrow. We hope that you whip them. We hope that you win. And, Phil, I guess it'll be May. So we'll be frolicking in May the next time we meet, won't we?
And I'm looking forward to that already.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, me too. Yeah, we'll be able to dance around the Maypole together.